heard on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
Hey, I'm Jerry Newberry. Welcome to The National Defense. Got a great show today. With us a little bit later on, hopefully, will be Major General David G. Perkins calling in from Iraq. And also we have a VFW Post Commander, Mike Craig, named Man of the Year. It's going to be a great show. But before we begin, we're going to do what we always do and dedicate this show to the men and women serving on active duty, the Guard and Reserves, to the millions of veterans out there, and of course to all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you. So again, like I said, with us today, I hope we have him on the phone, is Mike Craig. He's commander of VFW Post 5180, and that's from Seal, Alabama. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing fine, Jerry. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hey, thanks for being with us. Congratulations. We want to have you on the show because it's something struck us right away. We got a news clip that said you were named Man of the Year from the Men's Progressive Club in Georgia, which you live in Alabama.
That's correct, sir. That was a surprise to me, too.
Well, that's different. Can you explain that a little bit, how someone who lives in Alabama gets named 2008 Man of the Year from a organization in Georgia?
I'll try, Nate. Jerry, I'll try my best. Like I said, I was a little confused myself. They have been running quite a few articles on our Post 5180. We started out this year trying to change the reputation of that post.
Well, let's talk about that. What kind of reputation were you trying to change?
Corner bar. The same reputation that a lot of the smaller or the older VFW posts have. And
just a bunch of old vets sitting around drinking beer, telling war stories kind of thing?
Yep. And the sad thing is it does fit a few of the posts. I was upset about a year ago. I asked the senior officers of our post. I've been a life member of Post 5180 since I retired from the Army in 95. We wasn't getting nothing done. We weren't doing nothing for veterans that I could see. And what's not seen is usually not done. And I asked the one of the senior officers, I won't mention his name, several times what the purpose of the VFW was. His response was terrible, and it set me aback. And his response was, the purpose of the VFW is a place where soldiers and veterans can come and drink a cold beer.
That's what he said, huh?
I just thought that was awful.
All right, well, let's clear that up. What's your take on what the purpose of the VFW is?
It's quite clear what the purpose of the VFW is. We, our only reason for existence is for the support and help of veterans of foreign wars, current active duty soldiers, Marines. That's our only purpose of existence, is to help those that have written a blank check to the United States and not knowing how much that check was going to be cashed for.
So when you heard this former post commander make that statement, how'd you react to that? What'd you say back to him? Did you stick it where the sun don't shine?
Well, I told him basically what I just told you, and I told him that was the reason that a lot of VFW post had a bad reputation in the community, because if we see ourselves as a bar, if that's what we see ourselves as, a corner bar, what the hell's, excuse my language, but what is the community going to think? How are they going to see us?
Exactly.
See ourselves.
And the sad thing, what a lot of people don't realize, is that the stereotype that's been attached really hurts the cause. It hurts us when we're trying to help a veteran or a military family. It hurts us tremendously. And the fact is, only a small percentage of posts have what they call canteens to start with.
That's correct. That's correct. And we do have one. and it serves a good function. And to be honest, we without the canteen, we would have trouble paying for any programs or helping veterans, because our membership, as is the case with a lot of posts, that is nothing more than a canteen. Members join, members don't pay their dues, because there's nothing worthwhile that would make that member pay his dues. Why pay your dues to belong to something that's doing nothing?
Doing nothing, exactly. So, you had a reaction to this. You made your statement, but you did more than just talk about it. And obviously, what you had to say motivated and inspired other members of that post. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Some of them. Enough of them to start out with. I had a meeting in January of last year with some concerned members and tried to put out a 12-month plan on how we could make that post a true VFW post and fall in line with the VFW missions and SINC's, the Commander-in-Chief's, intent and desires. And I made up a plan that I'm still working off of, a 12-month plan, and I followed it to the T.
What branch of the service, Mike?
I was in the Army.
And what rank?
I was First Sergeant.
I suspected as much.
Yeah, I know. I started laughing when I said that. A lot of people tell me that, but
okay. First shirt. You put your plan together.
Yes, sir.
And you got everybody. You know, first sergeants are first sergeants, retired or not. So obviously, you got things organized. And talk about some of the great things you and other members of that post have done.
Well, I've started out a program, and I had to use non-members to start with, and two of them were my sons. But we started out a program called Ramps for the Wounded. You know, the VFW's got a great program for unmet needs for active duty. There's a lot of people out there that's in bad shape and are hitting hard times that need some help. So we started gathering up. I'm also a superintendent for a construction company. So we started gathering up help. Carpenters, electricians, and started helping some of our members, some of our older members. In particular, the first one was a service officer that had done a great service to this post, but it had open heart surgery and fell on bad times. We went out to his house one weekend, and we built a new porch. We built a 36-foot long, 4-foot wide ramp with handrails, and it was a great day. And after that, I started getting a few more volunteers in. I started getting help from the post, members and past members, which have now came back to the post. Membership is at 130%. Life membership is at 201% right now from last year. And we just continued to do that. We went out and looked. People didn't ask. We went out and looked, and word of mouth got out. And if someone seen a veteran or a widow of a veteran that needed help, they contacted me. We got together, scraped up the money, scraped up the materials, and went out and helped them out. I think that's what we need to be doing.
So you have a name for this program, Help for Heroes. Is that correct?
Sure. It was Ramps for the Wounded. We started out in January the 19th of 2008. And after that, I put in my help, my volunteers. I wrote up certificates for them. Had parties for them at the house, cookouts, to thank them, but that's about all that, you know, that I could do. So I put them in for volunteer awards to VFW to find out that non-members of the VFW working under Post 5180 on its programs are ineligible for volunteer awards through the VFW. Made no sense to me. So what I did is I've created a new organization. It's the same as Ramps for Wounded, but the people outside the VFW that could not come to our meetings, could not vote, could not hold office in this organization are now welcomed with open arms. We meet once a month, sometimes two, but normally once a month on Monday evenings at the post. First meeting, we had about 12 members. 2 weeks later, when we was getting our bylaws wrote up and getting our charter started, my meetings went to 30 to 36 members, and that's what we've got there every time we have a meeting now. Actually, we have a project scheduled for this Sunday, and we decide on the projects. My field director, his name is Matthew Harrelson. He's a great man. He's helped this post out over the years, and he's helping it out a lot right now. And everything's done under the VFW. But like I say, we have our meetings at the post. The post sponsors this organization, and it's open to the public. We have brought the community into the post. And, Jerry, you were embedded in Iraq and Afghanistan, if I'm not mistaken.
That's correct.
All right. And it goes back to what we were saying before. If we see ourselves as a bar, that's what the community sees us as. If we see ourselves as a vital part of that community and we embed ourselves into that community, we become part of that community.
Yeah, well said. Hey, we're speaking and listening to Mike Craig. He's commander of VFW Post 5180 from CLA, Alabama, named Man of the Year from the Men's Progressive Club of Georgia. And note that I said he's from Alabama. The effort he helped put together within his community is an amazing story. Just another example of what the VFW is about and what VFW members accomplish out in their community. You know, nationally last year, I think we VFW members contributed anywhere from $16 to $20 million worth of community service. And I'm gonna run out of time here, but I just want to say the Help for Heroes program, they call it Mule Team One, over $20,000 worth of work at Veterans Home in the past 7 months at no cost to veterans. Mike Craig, commander of VFW Post 5180, thanks for being with us, brother, and keep up the good work.
You keep up the good work too, Jerry. Love y'all.
All right. Hey, what a great story. I'm Jerry Newberry. You're listening to The National Defense.
The Veterans of Foreign Wars believes in active allegiance to flag and country. Through legislative activism and service to our military forces, veterans, their families, and communities. Freedom starts at home. Pledge your allegiance again. If you're a veteran and served overseas, you may be eligible to become a member of the nation's elite veterans organization, the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
You've served your country, now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
In a military warehouse south of Washington, D.C., a USO stuffing party is in full swing. By the end of the day, volunteers will have stuffed over 10,000 USO care packages, packed them in boxes, loaded them on trucks, and sent them on their way to our soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and military bases around the world. They'll stuff them full of things that most of us take for granted, but that our troops don't often have. Things like toiletries, playing cards, candy, books, little things,
on the radio.
Little things that carry an enormous message to our troops. Little things like thank you, like we'll never forget you, like we're behind you 100%. Like we love and cherish each and every one of you. Little things. We're all about the little things. We're the USO. So are you. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit us at USO.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
Hey, I'm Jerry Newberry. You're listening to The National Defense. We've got a great show today. Some things we really need to talk about, at least briefly, before we get into our guest, which I might add, hopefully a live call from Iraq, Major General David G. Perkins, boots on the ground. So we'll see how that goes. A lot of things in the news recently relating to our military and veterans. Of course, we have a new Secretary of VA, former General Eric Shinseki. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to have the opportunity to meet Secretary Shinseki next week in Louisville. He's going to have his hands full. He did a great job in the military. And, of course, what most people remember him for is the fact that when we went into Iraq, he stood up to Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, and the entire administration, quite frankly, told him, look, this isn't going to work. We need more soldiers. You know, he questioned what was going to happen after they overthrew Saddam Hussein. And, you know, the truth is he was summarily dismissed. And really, that was an injustice. Smart guy. I believe he came up through the ranks, started out as a enlisted man, made it 4-star general, and now the new Secretary of VA. We've had some notable people hold that position. It's a very difficult position. Department of Veterans Affairs, second largest agency in the government. And, you know, we've had a progression of secretaries through various administrations. Secretaries change, bureaucrats don't. And there's a lot of bureaucrats within the system, and that's probably part of the problem. These people get entrenched in the government, and quite frankly, they don't care. They forget who they're serving, and they don't care who they're serving. So General Shinseki, we wish him luck. We are, you know, we're optimistic. We want to be optimistic that he's going to be able to square the VA away. They've got a lot of problems. They do, you know, we have to give them some credit. They do a good job. They haven't received the type of budget or adequate funding they need to meet the growing demand. But hopefully that's going to change. There's some new legislative just announced that will call for adequate funding of the VA, and they'll be funded up front. None of this, not part of the discretionary process, et cetera, et cetera. It's been a mess for years. So he's going to have his hands full. He's going to have to deal with the backlog of cases, with the increasing, seemingly increasing problems with PTSD, traumatic brain injury, host of problems. So good luck to Secretary Shinseki. Other things going on in the news. Afghanistan, things are heating up in Afghanistan. A recent bombing, suicide attack near some government buildings. One of those buildings, same place I personally witnessed a suicide bombing back in 2006. So the Taliban is active. President Obama and General Petraeus, the rest of the military, have a plan. I think we're going to get there, but the Afghan government certainly needs to get out of Kabul and get out there in the provinces, reach out to the people in order to give itself credibility. You can't govern from the bunker, so to speak. So great show coming up again, and I believe with us right now is Major General David G. Perkins in just a second. You're listening to the National Defense.
The following letters were written by our troops.
My dear fellow Americans, I truly appreciate your support. I was starting to wonder if people had forgotten about us over here, but then one of my buddies showed me this website. And now as tears are streaming down my face, I can see for sure that you haven't. Private Emily B., U.S. Army.
It's so heartwarming to see the American people not letting the men and women of the armed forces be forgotten. Your letters make a group of grown men, battle-hardened and gruff, act like a bunch of kids around a Christmas tree. Thanks. Staff Sergeant Matthew H., U.S. Army.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. But don't take our word for it. Take theirs. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.
So, it's my first day to be a big brother.
Wait, so what am I going to do with this little guy? Maybe I'll take him to a movie. No, not big enough. A museum. No. I'll take him to a carnival. Yeah, we can go on a Ferris wheel, or a roller coaster, or a plane ride, or hot air ballooning. It's gotta be big. It's gotta be huge.
Hi, I'm Alex.
Hey, Alex. I'm Felipe. So, what do you want to do today?
I was thinking maybe watch the game on TV.
Yeah, cool. I was thinking that too.
When you're a mentor, it doesn't matter what you do. See a movie, play catch, or just go for a walk. The important thing is spending time together. A little of your time means a lot to a kid.
This is Laura Bush. Help America's youth. Be a friend. Be a mentor. Just be there.
To be a mentor, go to bigbrothersbigsisters.org. That's bigbrothersbigsisters.org. A public service message brought to you by Big Brothers, Big Sisters, and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Jerry Newberry. You're listening to the National Defense. You know, we do this quite often, have members of military leadership on the show, and we certainly, through the years, have had a lot of conversation with people downrange in Iraq and Afghanistan, and this week's no different. Joining us today is Major General David G. Perkins. He's the Director of Strategic Effects, Multinational Forces Iraq. Hey, General, how are you?
Great, Jerry. How are you doing today?
Good. Hey, thanks for taking the time. I know you're really busy, a lot going on in Iraq, and again, we appreciate it. In your capacity as Director for Strategic Effects, man, you have a full plate. You coordinate and implement political, economic, and communications activities on behalf of the multinational forces. That sounds like a huge job.
Well, yeah, it's exciting and it's energizing to be able to work with all the great people over here, both U.S. and the Iraqis. And as you said, what we focus on here in strategic effects is all of the non-kinetic aspects, so to speak, as you said, political, governance, economic, business development, as well as communications, public affairs, things that we're doing right now.
And we've discussed this on air before. People, I think, still don't realize how the role of today's soldiers, today's military has changed. The days of just going into an area and, to put it very simply, blowing things up and killing the bad guys, those days are gone. The Army certainly has a new doctrine, and it includes all of the things that you oversee, the political, economic, and communication aspects of going into any theater.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's amazing what our young soldiers and veterans have done over here, really since we got here, but even even more so recently. In fact, I was just before I went online to speak with you, we were getting our normal evening update. It's a little after 7 p.m. over here, and you know, all the units report of what's going on. And as I was going through, one division up north is saying they're focusing on delivering electricity, clean drinking water, focusing on repairing sewer systems so that you don't have raw sewage running down the streets, working with Iraqi children to provide them school supplies, get their schools open, again, potable water, water treatment plants. And again, this is being done at the same time when they are also providing a high degree of security. So they are out fighting Al-Qaeda, fighting the terrorists in one part, or in one part of the day even, and then they'll come back and go and help the local people dig a well or open a school. So it's amazing what we ask of our young troopers over here. But I got to tell you, each and every time they deliver well beyond our expectation.
Oh, absolutely. You were you commanded the 2nd Brigade of 3rd ID during Operation Iraqi Freedom, correct?
Correct.
That was back in 2003?
2003, yes.
2003. Quite a few years have gone by since those days you commanded the Brigade of 3rd ID. What sort of differences, you know, as you walk around Iraq today, what is the major differences you see?
Well, you know, probably the word that best describes it, and this is a word that the Iraqis use themselves, is life is returning to normal. We just recently, on 31 January, had provincial elections here. Their first democratic elections where they have open lists, where they can actually vote for candidates rather than just voting for a party. And it was down at the provincial level, so the very local level. And so they came out in the millions, so over 7 million people voted. And there was not one security incident which prevented any of the election material, any of the election activity from going on. And this is compared to 2005, even, when we had the first national elections, when there were hundreds of attacks, over 44 people killed, and it was significant violence. So the people could just go out and do, quite honestly, what we take for granted, the United States, and vote for the candidate of choice. But to the Iraqis, that is a big deal. And I was recently being interviewed by a young reporter, and she was Iraqi, and in her mind, she said, you know, the other day I was standing in the center of Baghdad talking to people, and it seemed like a normal day. I mean, that's the word they use, and it seems to be, it's new to them that they can say the word normal. We kind of take it for granted, but it is so dramatically different than even just a year ago. Again, a great credit to just the enormous amount of work and effort of our young troopers over here.
Yeah, the word normal probably doesn't really apply. I would say the word extraordinary is a more fitting word, because, you know, in days past under the old regime, they certainly weren't afforded the type of luxury of voting for the candidate of their choice. So they might not have had violence, but they certainly, their choices were strictly limited. Let's talk about the elections a little bit more, and I think we need to try and explain this to the American public, why these provincial elections were so important. What makes provincial elections different than any other election?
Well, Iraq has 18 provinces, so probably analogous to our states. But they're all done on the same day, their provincial elections. So it's a national day, and it's run nationally. And there were a couple of points which made these, one, historical, and two, very significant for the Iraqi people. This is the first time they have ever been able to vote for a candidate. Before, in 2005, you could only vote for a political party, and then the party bosses would choose who they wanted to sit in the Council of Representatives. Here, they could actually go out and vote for a person. Now, again, the concern was, well, you know, people would be afraid to go out and vote because of intimidation, or they would not want to run for office because, of course, you're putting a public face out there. Well, really, just the opposite occurred. There were a little over 400 seats available in this election, and over 14,000 candidates were legally registered. So they're
wow.
a choice of 14,000 people running that are putting their face on campaign posters all over the place. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere here in Baghdad, and if there's a surface that wasn't moving, and even some that were, had a campaign poster on it. So people were proud to go out and campaign and say, I want to take part and help run the country. People were proud and excited just to go out and vote. Again, something that sometimes too many of us Americans take for granted and maybe don't even take advantage of our democratic right. But we saw entire families, even the little children, would go out. Even though the children couldn't vote, it was such a historic event for the family that the mother and father would want to bring the children to show them this is what democracy is about. Watch us vote, you know, dip the finger in the ink and get marked, and to show them that this is something that they have never known in their lives, but their children, again, and due in large measure to what all our great servicemen and women have done over here, are now provided the security and the democratic freedoms to be able to do this from a very young age. So this was something that people... When you talk to the Iraqis, it is a turning point in their lives. It is a new life. It is a new era here. They are in control of their country. They are in control of their destination, and they are actively taking part in it.
General, with the number of candidates out there, am I to take it that no specific party? We'll call them parties, were represented. This was just people from all parties. And wasn't that part of the problem, political problem in Iraq, that, dispute between the Shias and the minority parties, and that caused a lot of violence in the neighborhood?
Well, you know, you bring up a good point. It was the ethno-sectarian violence which really spiraled out of control and almost tore the country apart. So you had Sunni against Shia, one faction of the Shia against another faction of the Shia. And people were branded by their ethno-sectarian background, by their religion. This time, when we had individuals running, they may have been a member of a party, but they ran as individuals. But, again, what was noteworthy is if you take a look at the results that came out, no one single party affiliate based on ethno-sectarian background or religious or whatever had a clean sweep or majority. In other words, the votes sort of were across the spectrum. And when I talked to my Iraqi friends here, they said, well, what we saw is the Iraqi people were voting on the candidate who had the right qualifications. You know, he was he had schooling, he had the technical capability to run a province or be the mayor. He had, you know, the right ethical credentials. It wasn't, well, I'm my background is Shia, so I can only vote for Shia, or my background is Sunni, I can only vote for Sunni, or whatever the case may be. So the people who were elected, it really is a very broad spectrum, much more so than in 2005. And, of course, what that is going to mean is that now, as we stand up these provincial councils, they are going to have to govern as coalitions. One side cannot rule with an iron fist and subdue the other, which, again, is another step forward. And I've talked to a lot of the candidates who won the election, and that is almost a universal understanding they have, is that, say, you know, we're going to really have to bring all these various factions, ethno-sectarian groups together, and we're going to have to rule as a coalition. We're going to have to solve our problems in a democratic manner, and problems will be solved, you know, with ballots and not bullets. So not only was the process of the election historic and significant, but the outcome is going to drive, I think, further political reform.
Yeah, absolutely. General, I know the sheikhs have a huge impact in the country, and it's certainly Anbar province wants you were able to get the various tribes and sheikhs on board to fight against Al-Qaeda. Anbar settled down. How difficult was it to bring them into this political process, into the provincial elections?
Well, again, this has been an ongoing effort that, like everything, is not easy, takes time, dedication, and effort, but has produced dramatic results. As you said, initially, the out in Anbar province, which is very heavily a Sunni area, in 2005, less than 2% of the population out there voted. Last week, we had over 40%. So 20 times as many people took part. So that alone shows that they realize that the way to build the future for Iraq, again, is not to join in an insurgency, but it's to become a political candidate or to go out and vote. So the fact that you can turn that many people, millions of people, in a matter of a couple years from seeing violence as a solution and changing their view that, no, it's not violence, it's political debate, democracy, peaceful reconciliation, that is a tremendous sign of progress, because many things have to fall in place to that. There were, as is in probably most elections, some initial disagreements as to what the preliminary outcomes were out in Anbar, and some of the sheikhs were voicing some rhetoric with regards to the preliminary outcomes. And I think, again, what was indicative is the leadership in Iraq. The prime minister, the deputy prime minister, in fact, the deputy prime minister personally went out there, got all the sheikhs together, the other leaders, and said, look, you've got to decide. Are you going to let democracy be the way forward? And if so, then you have to accept the results, or do you want to go to the old ways, of violence and insurgency? And unanimously, they all, looked at him, kind of shook their head and said, we're gonna work with democracy and work through peacefully, and have come to reconcile and accept them. So, again, going through the process and having the elections is indicative of progress in many, many other different areas. To have this election, they had to pass a national election law. To pass a national election law, again, you had to get Kurds, Arabs, Sunni, Shia. They all had to vote in the Council of Representatives on how the election would occur. Would it be open list? Would it be closed list? Which provinces would it be done in? How would you determine the results? So everything that went into place for this whole last year, and it culminated on 31 January, the election day, it really is a measure of many things that have had to happen, not only security, progress in the security area, but progress in reconciliation, progress in political as well.
Right, and, allow me a moment to spew here. The elections, these provincial elections, are so significant. I'm pretty angry, given the fact that for the most part, mainstream media gave it about 30 seconds on TV. I think that does such an injustice to members of our military who have worked so hard and have sacrificed so much to help get Iraq where it is today. But there are those of us out here who understand, who realize how significant that was. And we just need to let you know, and so you can let other soldiers know, that we understand what they've accomplished. And it's an amazing accomplishment. And I just wish the media would give you all justice.
We appreciate the support we get from your listeners, for sure. In all our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and marine here, I mean, they know that what they're doing is important. They know it's making significant progress because they see it every single day. And and that is really, I think, what keeps them all going, knowing that the Iraq they leave is going to be much better than the Iraq they came to.
Absolutely. Hey, we have to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to The National Defense.
We're standing guard with the truth. The National Defense.
The VFW is looking for a few more heroes. The largest combat veterans organization in America wants to get you involved and keep you active. With nearly 2 million members and 9,000 posts around the country, the VFW is doing the tough job of supporting our troops. You can be a part of all the excellent programs to keep the fires burning on the front lines. Programs such as Operation Uplink, with phone cards for active duty and hospitalized veterans, Adopt-A-Unit, which provides assistance for nearly 1,000 military units, and care package efforts for the troops serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Only someone who's been there can understand what it means to be remembered. The VFW has been the heart and soul of the military for over 100 years. Isn't it time you stake your claim as a veteran? Call the VFW Membership Department at 1-888-JOIN-VFW or log on to VFW.org for more details. You've served your country. Now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
What do you want from the Wizard of Oz?
Just messing with you. But seriously, people don't want to stand in front of my big, awesome wizard head and hear me going, duh. They want answers. That's why I go to USA.gov, the official source for government info. It gives me the smarts to go with the show. Say someone asks for a brain. I go to USA.gov, type in student loans, and 4 years later, they're chock full of knowledge. Is the Wicked Witch terrorizing your neighborhood? Well, move. Then search USA.gov for change of address form so your friends can find you and the witch can't. How about if you're stuck here from Kansas and want to go home? Well, check out USA.gov for the latest travel restrictions and passport applications. I even use it for myself. Bought my sweet ride at a government auction I found on USA.gov. I call it the Wizmobile. Balloons are for squares.
For federal and state government information, there's no place like USA.gov.
Hey, welcome back to the National Defense. Today we're speaking with Major General David G. Perkins, Director of Strategic Effects, Multinational Forces, Iraq. Getting back to the political process and the things that enable peaceful elections and actually enable the process to take place in, to start with, is economics. Certainly without economic gain of sorts or economic hope or optimism, I don't think a peaceful political process could take place. Can you talk a little bit about where Iraq was, where it is today, and what the future is economically?
Yeah, well, actually, you bring up a good point there that you have to have a foundation to build a future on. And, you know, there's a number of things we take a look at. One of the main drivers of the economy here is availability of electricity. It has been a challenge, well, actually, before the war, quite honestly. And then in the last couple of years, attacks, terrorist activity on power lines, on power generation capability have been an issue. But again, thanks to the heroic work of our young servicemen and women, partnered with the Iraqi security forces, the attacks on the electrical capability have dramatically reduced. I mean, we rarely have them now. And power generation has increased almost 30% from last year. And last week, we had the highest ever recorded, even pre-war times, in the last couple of weeks has been over 55% higher than the same period last year. So, again, for that to occur, a lot of things have to happen. The Iraqis have invested billions of dollars in, with countries like companies like General Electric and Siemens, and are building power plants, are putting up lines. Another sector is obviously the oil. That's the lifeblood of Iraq here. As we all know, the price of oil has dropped dramatically, which is good for those of us, I guess, that have to fill up our cars every day to go to work, but it does have an impact on their budget over here. But that aside, what has made, again, a huge difference here is the different factions have come together to vote on a budget, to actually have a budget, which is a major step forward, because you have to have the Kurds, the Arabs, the Shia, the Sunni all agree on what are our priorities? What are we going to spend money on? How are we going to spend it? We have over $2 billion recently of foreign investment in things such as hotels, cement plants, transportation systems, with over 47 investment licenses signed, and there's another 70 in the hopper for foreign investment coming in because, again, of the increased security situation here, of the political stability that's coming, it is now becoming an attractive area for foreign investment to come in. So these are all parts of the equation. It's you've got to have improved security, you have to have political reconciliation, you have to have a vibrant democracy, and then after you have those things, what happens then is people see Iraq as a profitable area to invest in, and then you get foreign investment, you get internal investment, which then means you have jobs, which adds to the stability. So none of these things can be taken as a single point of focus. We have to do them all simultaneously. And again, as you said earlier in the show, that shows you what we expect of our young servicemen and women over here, because they are involved in all of these things.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, amazing progress in Iraq. I'm sure most people don't have a handle on that, but I can tell you a lot different from the time I was there back in 06. And there's light at the end of the tunnel, and the reason for that is because of our United States military people who have done so much for the people of Iraq, and we can't say enough good things about them. We've been speaking with Major General David G. Perkins, Director of Strategic Effects, Multinational Forces Iraq. General, thanks a million for being with us. God bless you. God bless all of our troops.
Jerry, thanks a lot. And again, thanks for the support for your great audience out there and the many veterans of other campaigns the U.S. has been involved in, because they, too, have made this world a much better place to live.
All right, General. Take care.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Hey, many thanks to Major General David G. Perkins. That's this week's show. We'll be back next week with the National Defense.
I never thought that this is where I'd settle down. I thought I'd die an old man back in my hometown. They gave me this plot of land, me and some other men, for a job well done. There's a big white house, sits on a hill just up the road. The man inside, he cried the day they brought me home. They folded up a flag and told my mom and dad, "We're proud of your son." And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace, I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. I remember Daddy brought me here when I was 8. We searched all day to find out where my granddad lay. And when we finally found that cross, he said, "Son, this is what it cost to keep us free." Now here I am, 1,000 stones away from him. Recognized me on the first day I came in, and it gave me a chill when he clicked his heels and saluted me. And I'm proud to be on this peaceful piece of property. I'm on sacred ground and I'm in the best of company. I'm thankful for those, thankful for the things I've done. I can rest in peace, I'm one of the chosen ones. I made it to Arlington. every time I hear 21 guns. I know they brought another hero home to us. We're thankful for those, thankful for the things we've done. We can rest in peace, 'cause we are the chosen ones. We made it to Arlington. Yeah, dust to dust, don't cry for us. We made it to Arlington.
The Veterans of Foreign Wars believes in active allegiance to flag and country. Through legislative activism and service to our military forces, veterans, their families, and communities, freedom starts at home. Pledge your allegiance again. If you're a veteran and served overseas, you may be eligible to become a member of the nation's elite veterans organization, the Veterans of Foreign Wars.
You've served your country, now you can help your country serve others. Call 1-888-JOIN-VFW. That's 1-888-JOIN-VFW.
In a military warehouse south of Washington, D.C., a USO stuffing party is in full swing. By the end of the day, volunteers will have stuffed over 10,000 USO care packages, packed them in boxes, loaded them on trucks, and sent them on their way to our soldiers in Iraq, Afghanistan, and military bases around the world. They'll stuff them full of things that most of us take for granted, but that our troops don't often have. Things like toiletries, playing cards, candy, books, little things. Little things that carry an enormous message to our troops. Little things like thank you, like we'll never forget you, like we're behind you 100%. Like we love and cherish each and every one of you. Little things. We're all about the little things. We're the USO. So are you. For more information and to find out how you can help, visit us at uso.org. The USO. Until everyone comes home.
The following letter was written by Sergeant Leroy P., U.S. Army.
I'm currently on my third tour to Iraq. Never have I ever seen so much love and support from people I don't even know. My mom always told me that there are angels among us. And right now, I really do believe that. Very much.
Your support may be the most important thing our troops can carry with them. To show your support, visit americasupportsyou.mil. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Defense and the Ad Council.